Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Tuesday, the 6th of February. Today I'll be joined by Duncan Balkan, who is a Watson's Daily ambassador. Hey there, Duncan, how are you doing today?
Hi, Peter, I'm great, thanks. How are you?
No, very good, thank you. So what story did you pick out from today's Watson's Daily? And actually, I do know the answer. I mean, I always know the answer, but I knew the answer before I asked you originally this question. But go ahead.
You did, yeah. You sent me the Daily this morning. I have a feeling I know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
So I could wonder. I could just one day just completely change it up and confuse you, but I'm not going to do that today.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk about a continuation of something we were chatting about last week.
Mm-hmm.
From the FT. So for anyone that doesn't listen to the podcast diligently, shame on you. One of the stories we talked about last week.
I can't believe you're dissing listeners here. But anyway,
I know. 40 odd seconds in, I'm already dissing people. I should probably just go back to bed. So we were talking about Parisians going to the polls to vote on higher SUV parking fees.
In Paris,
last week. And they have now been to vote on this, and a staggering 6% of Paris's registered voters turned up to vote for this. 6%. So it's obviously a really painful issue close to the heart for so many people. And they have voted, 54.5% have voted in favour of increasing these parking charges for SUVs. So that is officially a vote in favour, even though it's such a tiny turnout. Now, this means that parking charges for these offending vehicles will now up to triple in some parts of the city to be honest, eye-watering €18 an hour.
An hour.
Yes. I'm going to come back to that in a second because that staggered me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, owners will only be exempted if they have a permit for the immediate area. So I imagine that means if you're a resident in the area, you're not going to be charged out to park there every day. But they haven't really put any terms on that. And €18 an hour hit me really hard because occasionally for work, I have to park at St. Pancras International Station car park. I don't pay for it. It's part. I just want to say that I don't pay this personally. It's part of what I have to do for work. But even if I did pay for it personally, it's about £31 a day for like a 12-hour period. So within 2 hours here in Paris, you've gone past that. And I would say that's probably one of the most expensive car parks in the country because it's right next to two of our major railway stations in the centre of London.
Yeah.
And yeah, like I said, you go past that amount within 2 hours with this €18 now, which is why I just thought it was absolutely staggering.
Yeah.
The other thing about this I find really interesting and surprising, to be honest with you, is they've also said that electric SUVs will have to pay the fees if they weigh over 2 tons. So there's two things about that I find interesting. One is it obviously isn't an anti-pollution thing like the ULEZ charge and stuff in London, because that doesn't target electric cars at all. So it's clearly not they're trying to cut down pollution in Paris. They're literally just offended by big cars. And the second thing is there isn't a such thing as an electric SUV that weighs under 2 tons. So they put, if they weigh over 2 tons, actually even a Model S Tesla, which is not an SUV, weighs more than 2 tons because of the weight of the batteries. So it'll be interesting to see how they define what electric cars classify, because if they just go on weight, it's going to be most electric vehicles. Which I think is concerning, because obviously there's meant to be a push towards electric vehicles. And if you're kind of ruling them out of being able to park in Paris, unless it's, I think, the Mini, the electric Mini Cooper, I think, is about the only one that comfortably sits under 2 tons electric vehicle at the moment, and things of that size. I think that's kind of dangerous at a time when, like I said, as a whole, Europe is meant to be pushing people towards hybrids and electric vehicles. So I think, God, there's two sets of people that are going to be slightly worried. One is people that produce EVs, and one is people that produce SUVs, because that's a real headache for car makers, particularly if they plan models years in advance, that suddenly these aren't really going to be something that Parisians want to use. And France is quite a big market, so Paris will be quite a big market for cars in general. And SUVs has been a really quite profitable category, I think, for years. And that might not be the case anymore. So, yeah, we talked about it really briefly last week in terms of, is this actually going to go through? It has gone through. And like I said, those extra couple of bits with it being anything over 2 tons for an electric SUV as well, and the fact €18 an hour
for
me just made this staggering. So I couldn't ignore that one this morning, and you were quite right to send me the daily and go, I know what you're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Well, what's your take on this one?
Yeah, I think the fact that the electric SUVs are included in this is interesting, and it shows it, like you say, it's not just about emissions, although that's what everyone says. It's not just about emissions. It's about, I guess it's about footprint as well. And it's funny because I don't know. I mean, I don't know Paris intimately, right? But you know, I went. I've been the last 2 summers consecutively. One of the things I felt compared to London is how wide the streets feel compared to, you know, a lot of the narrowness of London, especially in the big central areas. You know, these huge boulevards and things, you know, whether or not the driving is any, you know, any more pleasant, I don't know. But but I do think that it feels bigger. So the fact that they're doing it there is quite interesting. So yes, it's emissions and footprint, and I think that you do wonder whether this is going to be a headache for motor manufacturers if this is adopted more in other in other places. I remember this is going back probably, I don't know, maybe 10 years or something. I do remember going to a garage of a French, Citroën. So I remember going to Citroën and I had to have something done to the car. And while I was waiting, I was talking to the sales guy and they were like, I'm thinking in the next year or two of buying a new car. I said I'm going to go petrol because the number of cities and things that are banning diesel, or you're only allowed to go into the centre on a Tuesday and a Thursday or something if you've got diesel. And I remember the sales guy going, oh no, not at all, no, they're much better, blah blah, and he totally dismissed it. But I do think that if more cities do this, the motor manufacturers are going to have to take notice. Yeah. And if they do, then I wonder what's going to happen. But then again, actually having lighter vehicles anyway is not a bad thing, because if they were made lighter, then if it's an SUV, well, no, if it's any car, if you make it lighter, it's going to go further. It's going to have a further range, whether you're petrol, diesel, or electric vehicle.
Yeah.
I also wonder, by the way, what will happen with hybrids, because I thought, I was under the impression that hybrids were particularly heavy, because you don't only have the battery, you have the conventional motor as well. So you're basically paying, you know, they are particularly heavy. So I don't know. I mean, maybe the manufacturers are going to have to adapt. They're going to have to make their cars lighter. It's a bit like, I was saying to you earlier that I forgot what the thing is called, but you know, those drones that you can buy, like a DJI, I think a DJI Mavic Mini or so. I think that's what it's called. I've forgotten what it's called. But anyway, basically that became very popular because I think, again, memory's a bit clouded here, but it's something along the lines of, if you know, there were regulations that said if it weighs above 250 grams, then you will need to register it and or possibly have a license or something. So DJI brings out this you know, drone that weighs 249 grams.
And it's
incredibly popular. So by the same token, you do wonder whether this kind of thing, if this does get adopted elsewhere, whether the automakers are going to have to take notes. At the moment, they'll be a bit like that salesperson in the Citroën garage that I went to, and they'll just go, yeah, whatever, you know, yeah, it doesn't matter. But if enough places do, it will matter, and car manufacturers will have to take notes. So
yeah, so you can totally see a lot of electric SUVs suddenly having a curb weight of 1,999.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes.
So interesting, let's say, particularly if it spills out of Paris and other major cities start looking at it. I think we said last week places like Birmingham and things like that might be prime for this. And any council, city council, particularly in the UK that's currently struggling financially, might look at something like this.
Oh, it'd be a nice little earner.
Absolutely, yeah, because let's be honest, one thing you have a lot of around cities normally is SUVs. Yeah,
exactly. So,
which I guess kind of proves the Parisians' point, but we normally I think as a country take offence for a different reason. It's normally because of the congestion and the emissions, whereas this is purely the actualised the footprint of the vehicles. So yeah, I thought it was really interesting this morning. What was your favourite story, Peter?
So I thought it was a very good story about Microsoft, which is working with a tech startup called Semaphore. Now the idea here is that they are going to that Semaphore has its has an AI chatbot, and Microsoft. The whole idea of this venture is to put together news stories using the AI chatbot that Microsoft can then use. Now. Apparently, this Semaphore, there are going to be a team of journalists, and they are going to use AI for research purposes. Now, what I thought sounded interesting at first was they said that they're going to use all sorts of news sources from around the globe, and they will include they will include things like newspapers from China or India or Russia, and they'll be summarizing what those points of views are. Now I thought that was really interesting because, I mean, for instance, at Watson's Daily, what I have done in the past when I have been able to is have been lucky enough to have had Watson's Daily ambassadors who come from all around the world, and I've asked them for their point of view of specific or particular geopolitical events or the impact of certain things on their country, and it's often been quite different to what is portrayed over here, for instance. Now the thing is that whilst that is interesting, I do think that you can't just translate newspapers of another country and then say here it is, because so much will get lost. And I think the reason why I say that is because I really feel that when you are looking at news from a particular country, you need to know, it's not just the language, you need to know what the feeling is like, what the mood is like. Is it the same how do people feel who are not living in the town centres versus the ones that are, versus the ones who live in certain, like in the UK, is the mood different in the southeast versus the north? All those kinds of things. So, and the problem is that if you do take those things into account, it means you have to have a big team, because you have to have people that are maybe native or very as close to native in terms of that language, but also knowledge of the country, what it's feeling like at the moment. And then use that in the context of that, that's where you get the news. It's not the same just to do a Google Translate. For instance, to use Watson's Daily as an example here. But so with Watson's Daily, right, I mean, I've used so many different sources over the years. And, if you don't know, I used to, I can speak Japanese. I used to be able to read, like the Nikkei and stuff in Japanese. I'm a bit rusty now, but the thing is that, when I started, I just thought because I'm trying to get the news out as soon as I can, I need to do it as efficiently as possible. And I knew that I wouldn't be able to use a Japanese Nikkei because it would take me too long to translate and then use that in the daily. So I did try and use the English version, but it just wasn't good enough. It wasn't exactly right. It doesn't pick everything up. So I stopped using that, for instance. But I think that if you then put that to, let's say it was Russian, right? So you're trying to look at what happens in a Russian newspaper and talking about, let's say, the war in Ukraine, right? Now, there are, I mean, you know, I've said in a lot of presentations that I do about commercial awareness that there are, that almost all, if not all, news sources have a bias of some kind. Yeah. And that's not a bad thing, because I think that it makes things more readable. I think if people were just presented with a list of a shopping list of facts every day, people just wouldn't would read them even less than they do newspapers, for instance, these days. Because what if you're presented with a load of facts, you've then got to work out for yourself what is the implication of those things, and then how that applies to what you know already.
Yeah.
And journalists do that. You know, that's one of the things that they do. And, you know, and they obviously checked fact sources and all that kind of stuff, right? So you need, you know, it's very important to have this. So, but as I always say, as long as you know what the bias is likely to be, where they are in the political spectrum, then you are able to make more informed choices about what the actual situation is. So anyway, going back to this, although the Microsoft deal with Semaphore sounds good and it sounds interesting, actually, I kind of think that it won't be that good. Unless you've got people on the ground and people actually doing this stuff and being there and experiencing it, which means you have to have big teams around the world, then it ain't going to work, in my opinion.
And that kind of almost kind of ruins the point of doing it by AI, doesn't it, needing the big teams around the world? Because normally the AI is there to bypass having to have a huge team.
Mm.
So I find this interesting. Obviously, there's a little bit of me. For those who didn't pick it up when I mentioned Sempankos earlier, I work in the rail industry. So the fact it's called Semaphore and there are things called signals to me, I was like, oh, that's nice. However, I'm inclined to believe, to agree with you on just about everything else you just said, because I think there's two things here with reporting the news you need. One is the language, right?
And
I was going to ask you about the how you would find translating Japanese, because I said there's just so many nuances in each language, and even sentence structure is different. So if you just try and do an exact translation, you're always going to have a slightly butchered version. I feel like AI would probably do that to start with. Same as, like, say, Google Translate. Mm. You never get an exact kind of translation of the way it would be spoken or make sense to a native speaker, just doing a direct translation. There's so, like I said, there's so much nuance in the language. Mm. And I think the other thing is the atmosphere, isn't it? You can never, AI is never going to be able to have that thing that humans have, where you know how an area feels.
Mm.
I'll put that into some context. So if I'm going to use the city as an example, because I think it's an easy one for people to grasp, there will be certain restaurants, certain bars, certain establishments in the city where, for example, traders will take clients try and do deals. Now, you will have a much better idea if you are out in those places every night and you can feel the atmosphere and hear deals being done and seeing people happy and, you know, lots of champagne flying around, than if you just read it in the news the next day and go, oh, yeah, deals are up or deals are down. You can't get an idea of that atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I think that is something that... Oh, sorry, I've got a horrible thing in my throat.
Okay.
That is something that a human being can feel.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure AI... will never be able to do it, because
it's
a feeling thing.
I mean, it's even actually, as you talk about that, it's even things as simple as, can I get a booking at such and such hot restaurant easily? Mm. You know, in down times, they'll be saying, yes, sir, of course we can fit you in at 1 o'clock with three people or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you say, oh, God, it's a real nightmare, I'm trying to get a table at such and such place, and they're booked solid for like 2 months. Then again, it's just a feeling. And I mean, I used to have this when I used to be broking in the UK, all my, you know, Japanese clients often used to phone, you know, me and talk to me, because, and they would say, what does it feel like? What is the atmosphere like on the high street? Are people buying stuff? You know, what is it? You know, how is it? And like I say, you can see some of that within the news, but you won't get that feeling unless you're actually there. So, and I got that similarly on the other side. So when I was working in Tokyo and people would, you know, phone up from the UK going, oh, I've heard this, or what sounds like a nightmare or whatever. And I would say, well, no, it's fine. You know, we're doing this and this and this is happening. It really is amazing. I mean, even when you think about how well we are all connected in this world, it is incredible to think that it's still that, just that extra. And I mean, okay, AI is good, and it's going to get better, but I just think it will be very difficult to replicate that kind of thing. And I think that what may happen is that we may see a model whereby you have let's take the streamers, for example, right? So like Apple Music and Spotify. So yeah, every now and again they have a meeting with all the big music, you know, music companies. And they then agree what the, you know, royalty fees are going to be per play and all this kind of stuff, right? So I wonder whether the tech companies want to avoid what is going on there. Because at the beginning, the royalty fees were, you know, so Spotify earned, you know, a lot of money. And it said, look, we are the distribution platform of choice, therefore, you know, you've got to pay us this. But then as time went on, the record companies felt in a bit of a stronger position, and they have made it so that Spotify has made less and less and less and less and less. And they've argued, we are the content creators, so yeah, we need more money, please. And so the money that Spotify has made has gone down. And that is difficult for them because they make money by music. I mean, okay, they've gone into podcasts and stuff in the last couple of years, but mainly it's all about music.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe with Microsoft, they're sort of thinking, they're looking at this and they're thinking, blimey, you know, we don't want to pay out loads, so let's do our own. But like I say, I wonder whether at some point there is going to have to be some kind of thing where you have the big tech meeting with the big, I don't know, big media or big publishers, and doing exactly what has been going on with Spotify and Deezer and all the rest of them, and doing that. Because, and I don't think that's necessarily going to be as damaging for their overall business as it is, say, for Spotify, because Spotify is all about music, really.
Yeah.
Whereas Microsoft has got so many different things, and I think what it will do is it just will make its services and the things it provides stickier, so that people will actually, customers will stay with them because they value these elements. But I don't know, it's just a thought.
Yeah, like you said, you would imagine it wouldn't be as damaging, like you say, when it's a small percentage of what they do compared to Spotify, who, even if you take podcasts and everything on top, streaming content is what they do. So even if it wasn't just music producers, if it was content creators as well, you can see why that is potentially more damaging for Spotify than Microsoft. But it would be interesting to see what happens when, like you say, a similar sort of thing happens to them, particularly with it all being AI generated. So it will be nicking a lot of other people, or compiling a lot of other people's content.
Yeah, definitely. But there we go. So, I mean, some very interesting subjects today. But thank you very much indeed, Duncan, for your
time.
And thank you very much for the listeners for listening. Have a great day, whatever you're up to. And we'll be back again tomorrow. Many thanks.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Bye.